Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 37 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Emily, the Flapper Dame. Welcome back to the show, Emily.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, continuing to talk about this modern-day war classic.
Yeah, most definitely. I just hope that you're not too hungry today.
Thankfully, so, I had lunch before I did this.
Very smart, very smart. I have a feeling that Miller wishes that they invited him in to join them here. So minute 37 begins with a soldier getting ready to start a shave, and ends with John telling it like it is. So we ended things yesterday with a steaming bowl of hot water.
Yeah.
More or less. And we saw that John is eyeing, John Miller is eyeing it. But that's the extent of what we got to see yesterday. And today they continue with that.
Yes.
And, you know, we are actually going to get a little bit more information as to the amenities that these guys have in the command post that the regular grunts in the field are not getting. I mean, you know, we first still see the hot water being used, you know, as the soldier's getting ready to take a shave. And then the shot changes and we get a very very close up of Miller's face, where you see that he's either recalling times in his memory where you know, where he maybe had such a great shave or something like that, or just it looks like he's longing for something from his past. Mm-hmm. You know, just by looking into his eyes. I mean, Tom Hanks is an amazing actor, and you know, this movie is further proof of that because of the emotions that we get to see on his face in so many of the various situations that his character comes across in this movie. But I mean, this is just the perfect one. You know, the idea that here's a guy who, you know, we know now for the last 3 days has been on his feet, leading his men through battle after battle, losing many of his men. And, you know, here he's reached a point where, okay, he's dealt with the fact that for the last 3 days, he probably has not had a shower. Forget about even a hot shower. He probably hasn't had any shower at this point. The closest he got to a shower was when, you know, he got all that water splashed on him as he was, you know, coming onto the beach. That was probably as close as one would say that he had a shower. And especially with the visuals and the descriptive nature of everything that happened to him, even when he was just getting out of the water, where he had, you know, water and blood mixed together that was streaming down his face and stuff like that. I mean, this is a guy who probably really does need a shower at this point. But, you know, here he sees these guys who were sort of, I guess you could say, in the back of the whole group of soldiers as they're moving forward. And, you know, these guys have it made. You know, they have this hot water, and then you know, as Miller continues to look, we see that someone's been pouring a cup of coffee, and after the coffee we see that there's these huge portions of a sandwich,
yeah,
that are sitting on a plate. You know, we see I mean, that is really thick bread. And the slices of meat are also very, very thick. And even the Swiss cheese that they have on there, you see, is very thick.
Yeah. You know,
and the guys in the command post are all just taking it in a very nonchalant way. You know, they're not making a big deal out of it. It's as if this is what we always eat. You know, and, you know, Miller herself, his mouth is probably watering, thinking about the fact that, oh, my God, these guys get coffee. These guys get these, you know, I don't know if that's considered ham and cheese, but meat and cheese sandwiches and stuff like that. You know, and again, it looks very inviting. And we we know that if it's in the command post that these guys are enjoying it. You know, there's no question about that. You know, it's I guess in a way it's a good thing that it wasn't that they didn't have something like steaming coming out of the you know, out of the sandwich, that they were having like sloppy joes or something like that, you know, where the meat would have been also with steam on it and stuff like that. But you know, it's just great the way that they show this. And then we
interesting.
Yeah. And then we get the tail end of what Anderson is saying. Yesterday he started saying, have Charlie Company hold at, and today he continues with, you know, Vierville until we can get some armor up there. And mm-hmm. then one of his aides, I guess, goes, yes, sir. And, you know, Miller again is just staring. You know, he's not really sure, you know, how he's supposed to act or react in this type of situation, because, you know, and theoretically he could ask to join in, but he's not sure. And then as he's looking, we see behind him that we get a shot from behind, you know, where we see the back of Miller's head, and he's looking at these four guys that are just lounging around basically.
Yeah.
You know, you have the guy who's taking a shave. You have another guy who's drinking a cup of coffee. And then we have two guys that are sitting on some crates also, and one of them is apparently the one eating from the sandwich. Now, did you notice that the plate with the sandwiches, one of the guy who's drinking the cup of coffee reaches over and takes the last piece. But just a second ago, there were three pieces that were left, you know, three halves of sandwiches. But now when you look at it very quickly, there's only one left. So it's a little bit of a continuity error, I guess, from that perspective. Or those guys just within 5 seconds know how to wolf down one of those things.
Well, it could be. They do teach you in the Army to eat very quickly.
That's true also. Yeah. But again, you know, Miller is envious of the life these guys are leading, basically. You know, he wants a little bit of a break, I guess. You know, as he's just watching them do it. And like, I mean, the crates that they're using to hold things on, you see there's ammunition crates. You know, we saw yesterday that there were K rations. You know, whatever they have, that's what they're going to use to set it up. So it's more, so it's simpler for them to, you know, go about their aristocratic lives, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that they're doing all this stuff.
Nothing gets wasted.
Yeah. And then they have another great camera shot because it basically pivots to the right, and then we see Anderson's face, you know, and he then turns to Miller, you know, as we talked about yesterday. This is Dennis Farina, and he turns to Miller and he goes, Airborne was supposed to win an open door for the rest of us. Instead, they misdropped, scattered all their sticks in the wind. What's your situation? So, do you know what that means by, you know, first of all, the whole idea of Airborne, anyone who's seen Band of Brothers, so it's the, you know, have you seen Band of Brothers?
No. I hesitate to do so because I know they cover through the entirety of like it's just very real, but no, I haven't, and I don't know if I ever will. But
because you're concerned that it might show you, you know, the dire situations that your grandfather was in, what's holding you back from wanting to watch it?
Well, there's that, and then there's the whole thing of, well, I know it's highly accurately researched and everything, but it's just, I don't know if I watched something exactly like that. But the thing about Saving Private Ryan is that it's based in fiction, even though it's inspired by real events, it's based in fiction, where something like Band of Brothers is more of a realistic type of thing. Like this is a crafted story right here. Maybe what's holding me back from watching Band of Brothers is its overall realistic portrayal. Even though all those characters are, some of them are fictional, this has like a narrative from start to finish. It's like a story within World War II. Like you could transpose this story to World War I if you wanted, of saving the one brother. But something like Band of Brothers, I feel, is like very specifically rooted in World War II. I don't know. It's just I'm kind of weird about it, I guess.
Okay, no, that's fine. I mean, I'm a big fan of Band of Brothers, but the reason that I just brought it up was because they clearly show there, just like they do in The Longest Day, how most of the guys that were dropped, you know, during the airborne mission overnight, because of all the anti-aircraft guns that were shooting at them and stuff like that, so most of them missed where they were supposed to drop, which is basically what Anderson is telling us right now, you know, that the airborne basically screwed everyone over because they misdropped and they scattered all their sticks into the wind. Now, do you know what that phrase means? Like, what is a stick in army parlance, I guess you can say?
They basically blew their chances at does it refer to like missing your mark completely if you scattered all like you wasted all your ammo?
No. So what they actually are referring to here is the fact that a stick is more or less a way for them to discuss how the guys in a plane.
Okay.
You know, because what they were or in a military unit is type of thing. So the basically they scattered all their sticks. So they scattered all the various soldiers, all around. And that type of thing. Again, a stick could be like a group of people that are in a plane, or it could be like a little unit that are all together and stuff like that. But so the basic idea here, though, is what he's saying is that, you know, these guys somehow just, they screwed everything up, and therefore the places where everyone was supposed to get to, they didn't get to, and they were just scattered all around. Making things much more difficult for the Allies to have a force that was all working together, going in one direction, that type of thing. Which again, it makes sense, especially knowing the history of what happened that day. So, there are also sticks can also refer to a plane. It could be that all the planes were scattered in the wind also. You know, it has a somewhat of a dual meaning here with how they do this. And, again, I love how in this little scene of dialogue, they give us so much information as to what basically has transpired over the last few days. And they just do it really well. And then, then right after he says it, Anderson turns to Miller and says, okay, what's your situation? And he goes, well, yes, sir. Section 4 is secure. We took out Toad 88s here, here, and here. So he walks over to the map showing him, the various places where they were able to get rid of those anti-aircraft guns. And then he says, they'd already gotten four of our Shermans and a number of our deuce and a halves. These two minefields are actually one big one. Once again, showing on the map where they were. He says, we tried to make our way up through the middle of it, but it turned into a mixed high-density field. A little bit of everything. Spring mine 44s, shoe mine 42s, pot mines, A200s, the little wooden bastards that the mine detectors don't pick up. This road here, they placed the big mushrooms, Tellermines, 43s. I guess for our tanks, from here, right up to the edge of the village, right here. So we marked them, called the engineers. Resistance, and then he goes, we had higher, and then he gets cut off as he's trying to explain it. So again, this is a great way for them to give us quick exposition as to the fact that, okay, it's been 3 days since D-Day, but Miller and his men are still at it. They're constantly being used to continue this fight. It wasn't that they just were on the beach. They finished the beach and they move forward. And then, you take another position and then you move forward and you take another position and you move forward. And, just in this little conversation between these two guys, these two commanders, we're getting so much information. I mean, it doesn't matter the actual words that they use here to describe it, because obviously they're using a lot of military terminology and they're talking about tanks and they're talking about mines and they're talking about the anti-aircraft and artillery and all these different various military weapons. But the bottom line is that what they're trying to tell us is that the fighting is still going on. We're not done, and we're far from being done. And I just love the way that it's presented to us this way, because it says so much. First of all, it says a lot about these characters, about how, these are the commanders, and they're still discussing, okay, what they've done, and where they're going to go from here on, that type of thing. So I think it's done really well. Again, I don't know where Section 4 is. but also the added detail of having Miller point to places on a map. I mean, again, we don't understand the map. We don't know where these places are. But, you're having this conversation between these two officers who both know where they're talking about. And he's, giving him a great update as to what they went through and, what can be expected. The idea that they called the engineers. So, okay, they had this whole area which they thought were two completely different minefields, when in reality it's one big minefield. Meaning you don't know where the delineating line is between them, that you can maybe walk through that area and stuff like that. Which also it hints to the fact that they lost a lot of men just in that space also, because if they thought it was. Right, because if they thought that it was two different minefields and they sent guys in between them, and then then they discover that it's a full minefield, so there's a that explains a lot, which I mean, we'll get to a little more in the week when Miller gives even more of an explanation about different things. I like the way that they do that. And again, this is another example of them giving us a little bit of exposition as to the hell that they're going through right before we find out, where they're going to be going in the future also, and stuff like that. And I love, it goes back to the attention to detail here. Did you notice all the different things that are on this map? You have a protractor and you have rulers. Someone is taking their time, marking up this map really well.
Yes.
And telling us, where they've been, where they're going, and I love how they have that little baton that Miller is using in order to point out things. He's not using his finger; he's using a piece of wood that looks like a little baton, trying to explain, where they've been and where they're going and all those things. And I love how in the background, there's always stuff going on, even in the conversation between Miller and Anderson. So we see a whole bunch of soldiers behind Miller that are just, talking, lounging around, moving around, stuff like that. It's a very active set with what they're showing us here.
Definitely. And you can just pick up on how the soldiers are I love how they keep everything moving while they're filming the scene with the map, because it just makes it very realistic. It's not like just pausing to look at this map. You can certainly bring yourself into the scene with it, but then there is the outside exposition of what's happening in the background. That's just such a good decision with the filmmaking.
Yeah. Again, we know that Steven Spielberg is amazing, so it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we know that Steven Spielberg is a genius director and knows how to get the audience's attention. And this scene does that so beautifully. They really grab our attention with everything that's going on here. They do it really well. That's pretty much all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, not really. We covered it all.
Okay, excellent. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So Emily, why don't you start off with your number five once again and work your way up?
Okay, number five is Toy Story, and I'm not even that big a fan of Toy Story. It's just overkill at this point. I get that it was all groundbreaking and everything, and Tom Hanks as Sheriff Woody is like I said, that's a movie from my generation. But the first one is really good. The second one is good, but then it just became kind of overkill as a cash grab. But Toy Story, number four is Apollo 13. I really like Apollo 13. I think it's a fascinating story, and I think it is the definitive like movie to watch if you want to study Apollo 13. If you want to get in terms of like a biographical drama. Number
Yeah,
three is,
I actually just watched it yesterday.
oh yes, it's just so good. Number three is Forrest Gump. My parents love that movie. I think Tom Hanks is just so good. I mean, he's so good at playing that character, and it's so iconic. It's I can't believe that movie is 30 years old. Number two is Saving Private Ryan, and number one is The Green Mile. I can remember my parents watching that movie, and me and my sister watching that movie, parts of it when we were little, not really knowing what it was about, but it being a very, very interesting movie to watch. It's been a very long time since I've seen it, but I just remember that having a big impact on me. Like, here I am as a toddler, not really knowing what this movie is about, but just being interested in it because I like the performances. So
And you haven't seen it in years, so you don't really remember it that well.
well, I haven't seen it's been a very, very long time since I've seen it. So yeah, but I can say that it was just so impactful because as a toddler, I was like drawn into wanting to watch it, even though I didn't know what it was about.
Okay, that's fair. I'm a big fan of The Green Mile. I think it's a great movie, great Stephen King novel. Even though I don't like the fact, I've mentioned this before, I don't like the fact that it's split up into six different parts because they recap too much in between, at the beginning of each of those six parts. So that, But oh well, what can you do? That's the you gotta take the good with the bad for those type of things. What can I tell you? Yeah. All right. So Emily, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yes, I have my film blog, theflabberdamefilm.wordpress.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at flabberdame16, and then I'm on YouTube at flabberdame, in parentheses, Emily G. So you can find me there.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude. You